It's July 1st, 1520, in the Aztec city of Tenochtitlan, Mexico, and a battle is underway. The nobleman Cuitlahuac is one of tens of thousands of Aztecs who have taken up arms against Spanish invaders who are trying to conquer their city. The Spanish conquistador Hernan Cortes arrived on these shores with his soldiers about a year ago. At first, the Aztecs hoped to befriend the Europeans. They welcomed them as their guests, showering Cortes with gifts of gold and letting him set up camp in their main city. But Cortes did not come in peace. Within months, his soldiers started murdering Aztec priests and chiefs in an attempt to secure power. Cuitlahuac's brother, the Aztec emperor, was among the many who were slain. Now, Cuitlahuac and his fellow citizens are hungry for revenge. They drive the Spanish to the city's edge in a series of violent skirmishes. And as the last of the departing Spaniards disappear into the distance, Cuitlahuac stops to catch his breath. He looks around at the streets, littered with the bodies of the Spanish. His sword is sticky with blood, and his arm aches from the fight. But he has strength enough to rattle his shields in triumph. The Aztecs have done it, and the Spanish are gone. But the Spanish invaders have left behind an enemy more powerful than any army. It will kill 40% of the city's inhabitants, including Cuitlahuac. When Cortes and his men return to the city in less than a year, the Aztec people will be too weak to mount a defense. This enemy, which has already killed millions as it continues to spread across the globe, will come to be known as smallpox. From Noiser and Airship, I'm Lindsey Graham, and this is History Daily. History is made every day. On this podcast, every day, we tell the true stories of the people and events that shaped our world. Today is December 9th. Smallpox, the speckled monster. It's March 1718 in the city of Constantinople, what is today Istanbul, Turkey, 200 years since smallpox devastated the indigenous populations of Mexico. Lady Mary Wortley Montagu, an English aristocrat, dabs the heat from her forehead as she ushers an old lady into the British embassy. Lady Mary hopes this local medicine woman might be able to help protect her son from smallpox. Lady Mary moved to Constantinople a year ago with her husband, the British ambassador. She was once a darling of the British aristocracy, a beautiful and witty woman who spent her days mingling with the royal family, until she herself contracted smallpox. The disease left her with terrible scars and damaged eyesight, but she survived. Not everyone is so lucky. Smallpox epidemics lay waste to millions around the globe every year. In its most potent form, the disease kills 30% of the adults who catch it and 80% of children. But not in Turkey. Though smallpox is widespread here, the people survive in greater numbers and they suffer from milder symptoms. And when she first arrived, Lady Mary noticed the locals have beautiful skin, barely any scars. Then one day, while spending her free time with the wives of local Turkish officials, she saw an old woman administer an unusual procedure called variolation, something her Turkish friends claim protects against smallpox. It's common knowledge in these days that those who survive smallpox are immune to catching the virus again. And variolation involves deliberately infecting healthy people with a mild form of smallpox by rubbing the pus from an infected person into small cuts on their arms and wrists. The process causes far less severe smallpox symptoms than if the virus is caught naturally. But crucially, it still seems to provide immunity against future infections. Lady Mary has never forgotten the terror of the dark days when she nearly died from the disease. She doesn't want her son to experience that sort of pain, especially in a foreign country so far from home. So she tracked down the old medicine woman and brought her to a private room at the British Embassy. Waiting inside is the embassy's surgeon, a man named Charles Maitland. Lady Mary wants Maitland to oversee the woman as she administers the procedure on her son. Maitland has heard of variolation, but he knows very little about it. It's already practiced in China, India, and Africa, but not Europe. His ignorance led him to try to talk Lady Mary out of it, but she wouldn't listen. Now Maitland watches nervously as the old woman lays out the tools of her trade, a needle to scratch the child's skin, and a nutshell which contains pus from a smallpox victim. Lady Mary lifts her child onto her lap and exposes his soft white skin. Then she turns to the old lady and tells her to get on with it. After the variolation, her son will recover from the mild illness caused by the procedure without any scars, and Lady Mary will become a true believer in the process. Years later, back in London, she will insist that Charles Maitland administer the procedure to her 3-year-old daughter, who will also recover. Soon, word will spread among Lady Mary's influential circle and eventually reach the Princess of Wales, whose oldest daughter nearly died from smallpox. The princess is desperate to inoculate her other children, but her physician is also reluctant. So too is her father-in-law, the King of England. Before the king risks trying out variolation on his grandchildren, he will want proof that the process is truly safe. It's August 9, 1721, in Newgate Prison, London, a few months after Lady Mary's daughter was successfully variolated. Anne Tompion, a 25-year-old pickpocket, stands in a cell with 5 other prisoners under the watchful eye of a small group of doctors. All these prisoners have been sentenced to death for their crimes, but today they are smiling. They have volunteered to take part in an experiment in exchange for their freedom. The Princess of Wales was not the only person keen to explore the benefits of Lady Mary's discovery. A group of physicians also saw its potential in combating smallpox. They petitioned the king, asking if they could conduct an experiment on condemned prisoners to see if variolation works. In exchange, these prisoners would be given a full pardon. The king agreed, and Anne the pickpocket was one of the first volunteer. She eagerly rolls up her skirt as she glances at the doctors in their fancy clothes. Rumor has it that one of them is even the king's personal physician. But Anne is unimpressed and wipes her nose with the back of her hand. She doesn't flinch as the surgeon makes the first incision in her leg. It hurts, but not as much as the hangman's noose would. The next day, Anne's incision shows sign of infection, and a few days later, her fever starts. Soon after, spots appear on her face, but the infection overall is mild, and she recovers quickly without scars. The experiment seems to be a success. A month later, on September 6th, Anne the pickpocket will be freed as promised, along with all the other volunteers. The outcome of the experiment is enough to convince the king to allow his granddaughters to be subjected to variolation, though he will not permit it to be done to his male heirs. But for most other folk, variolation will soon become common practice across Western Europe. But the king's hesitance is founded. Variolation is dangerous. It infects healthy people with smallpox. Those infected mostly suffer mild symptoms, but a small percentage of them will still die, and they can pass the virus on, which risks further epidemics. It will be another 70 years before a safer, more effective method of inoculation is discovered, with the development of the very first vaccine. It's May 14, 1796, in Gloucestershire, England, 70 years after the Newgate Prison experiment. Edward Jenner, a country doctor, is about to conduct an experiment of his own. In front of him sits a perfectly healthy 8-year-old boy. Dr. Jenner has a theory he hopes will help stave off smallpox, a disease which he calls the speckled monster and the most dreadful scourge of the human species. In the 1790s, variolation is still the only method used for inoculation against smallpox. But Dr. Jenner knows all too well that variolation is flawed and still dangerous. When he was 8 years old, he was subjected to the process. It was a terrible experience. He almost died. And since then, he studied smallpox obsessively in search of a better way to inoculate against the disease. Today, in pursuit of that goal, Dr. Jenner plans to infect this 8-year-old boy with a different disease. After thoroughly examining the boy, Dr. Jenner calls into the room another patient, a milkmaid named Sarah Nelms. Sarah has caught cowpox from Blossom, one of the cows she milks. It's a disease similar to smallpox, but far less life-threatening. She has minor blisters on her hands, but for the most part, her skin is silky and smooth, and she feels okay. Being out in the country, Dr. Jenner often sees patients with cowpox. He's also aware of a common folklore that milkmaids, like Sarah, have clear skin because cowpox gives them immunity to the virus's deadlier cousin, smallpox. Dr. Jenner has an inkling that there may be truth in the myth, and he's going to test that theory today. Dr. Jenner smiles encouragingly at the boy as he cuts two small incisions into the child's arm. He's impressed by the boy's bravery. Next, Dr. Jenner takes Sarah's hand and cuts open one of her blisters. He scrapes some of the infection onto his scalpel as she shudders and turns away, not quite as brave. Carefully, Dr. Jenner wipes the pus from her hand into the boy's cuts before applying bandages. 6 weeks later, the boy comes back to see Dr. Jenner. This time, the doctor infects the child with the more deadly smallpox virus. He's carefully watched, but the boy does not present any symptoms. A few weeks later, Dr. Jenner tries again with the same result. Still, no symptoms. To Jenner, this proves the theory. Cowpox can give immunity to smallpox. Additionally, this process of inoculation is far safer than variolation because cowpox is not deadly, nor does it seem to spread from human to human. Dr. Jenner has just invented the first vaccination in human history. In acknowledgement of its origin, the name of his discovery comes from the Latin word vacca, meaning cow. As a result of Dr. Jenner's work, vaccination would become a new weapon in the fight against smallpox, but it will be another 160 years before the whole world will unite and rid the world of the scourge that during the 20th century alone kills around 300 million people. It's October 30th, 1977, in the town of Mirka on the southeast coast of Somalia. A man named Ali Mal Malin lies in bed, sick. His body is covered in a rash and his head is pounding. Ali works as a cook and an occasional vaccinator at a local hospital for the World Health Organization's smallpox eradication team. A couple of weeks ago, he offered to direct a young family with suspected smallpox to an isolation camp on the edge of town. Then, he came down with a fever himself. The world is on the verge of wiping out smallpox, thanks to a global drive by the World Health Organization, or the WHO. Over the last 10 years, the WHO has chased down outbreaks, isolated villages and towns, and provided vaccinations. Their efforts have been so effective that Somalia is the last country on Earth suffering an outbreak. But it's finally under control, with all suspected cases contained in isolation camps like the one Ali went to last week. Ali knows he shouldn't have risked being in the car with young family. He's not vaccinated. It looked too painful at the time, and he never told anyone that he never got around to it. He knows he should inform the authorities that he's ill, but he doesn't want to be sent to an isolation camp. So instead, Ali hopes he can just lie here in bed until the sickness goes away. But Ali's infection is discovered when one of his friends reports his condition to local disease surveillance officials. He is immediately isolated, and a containment response is put into motion. WHO officials shut down the town and trace all of Ali's contacts. Police set up checkpoints. The hospital where Ali works closes its doors to new patients. And as part of the effort to contain Ali's infection, the WHO vaccinates 50,000 people. Ali is lucky. He will survive, having contracted a milder form of smallpox, and the disease does not spread further. 6 months later, the WHO's office in Nairobi states that Ali Mal Malin was the world's last known smallpox case. Sadly, the WHO is wrong. Despite their best efforts, smallpox has still one more victim to claim. It's August 24th, 1978, at East Birmingham Hospital in England, a year after Ali Mal Malin was presumed to be the last person ever to catch smallpox. Professor Alastair Geddes, a consultant at the Infectious Diseases Unit at the hospital, cannot believe his eyes. In the bed in front of him, a woman lies barely conscious, her skin covered in a rash of spots, ballooning into pus-filled blisters. Janet Parker, a 40-year-old medical photographer, was rushed into the unit by ambulance staff. Her mother won't accept the general practitioner's diagnosis of chickenpox, remembering how different that rash was when she nursed Janet through it as a child. Professor Geddes agrees with Janet's mother. If he didn't know better, he would suspect smallpox. But the newspapers announced the last known case of the deadly virus a year ago in Somalia. Professor Geddes has a terrible feeling that there could be an explanation. Janet works in the same building as a smallpox research laboratory run by his friend, Professor Bedson, at Birmingham Medical School. It's possible the virus could have escaped. Professor Geddes orders that all Janet's contacts be traced and quarantined. Then he calls his friend, Professor Bedson. That night, the two men sit at the electron microscope in Professor Bedson's laboratory and confirm what they already believe to be true. Janet has smallpox. For the next 3 weeks, Great Britain's second largest city experiences a full-scale public health emergency in a bid to contain a possible outbreak. Janet's house and car are fumigated by health officials who also vaccinate anyone she may have come in contact with. Officials place hundreds of people in quarantine. And after all their efforts, only one other case is identified, Janet's mother. 18 days after first arriving at the hospital, on September 11, 1978, Janet dies, becoming the last known victim of smallpox in the world. Her mother recovers fully, having been vaccinated both as a child and again when her daughter was diagnosed. A year after Janet's death, on December 9, 1979, the Global Commission for the Certification of Smallpox Eradication declares the virus has been fully wiped out. The WHO's program is considered a public health triumph. In just over a decade, global cases of smallpox had dropped from between 10 and 15 million to zero. Today, the smallpox virus exists only at two WHO-designated sites for research, a laboratory in the United States and one in Russia. And Blossom, the cow that gave Sarah Nelms cowpox 200 years ago, will not be forgotten. Her hide is at St. George's Hospital Medical School, and her portrait hangs at the Royal College of Pathologists in London. But it is Dr. Jenner who will go down in history as the father of immunology, the man who helped free the world from the most dreadful scourge of the human species. Next on History Daily, December 10th, 1946, following the horrors of World War II, the United Nations General Assembly votes in favor of the Universal Declaration of Human Rights. From Noiser and Airship, this is History Daily, hosted, edited, and executive produced by me, Lindsey Graham. Audio editing by Molly Bach. Sound design by Derek Behrens. Music by Lindsey Graham. This episode is written and researched by Vanessa DeHaan. Executive producers are Stephen Walters for Airship and Pascal Hughes for Noiser.